Now, over 450,000 adults and children in Ireland suffer from asthma. And I'm delighted to say that joining me in studio now is Dr. Declan Matthews. And you're very welcome, Declan.
Linda, how are you today?
I'm all the better for seeing you, my dear.
Absolutely.
Now, that's a staggering figure, isn't it? 450,000?
It is. Absolutely. 450,000 in Ireland, with the fourth highest prevalence in the world. Nobody seems to know why we have, but we have the fourth highest prevalence of asthma in the world. It costs our economy 472 million per annum. 20% of children are prone to asthma, and 8% of adults are prone to asthma. So you'll see from that, like 20% down to 8%, certainly a certain percentage do seem to grow out of it, which is good. That's good news.
So we better start by explaining what exactly is asthma. So
basically, it's a chronic inflammation of the lining of the tubes that bring air into your lungs. So you have these tubes, little narrow tubes bringing air into your lungs. Their lining gets inflamed. When it gets inflamed, it gets a little bit red, gets a little bit of mucus there. It narrows down, and that narrowing is what causes the wheezing. It's a bit like, you know, when you blow across the top of a bottle, you can hear a sound. Well, narrowed tubes cause the wheezing. So you get wheezing with it. You get cough with it. You can get a bit of chest tightness with it.
So how then is it diagnosed? Because kids obviously will be very prone to the likes of chest infection and stuff like that. How does it go from being regular chest infections to actually being asthma? How do you diagnose it?
Usually, basically what you do is you look for different sort of a different combination of symptoms, and often it's the history is the most important bit. So if you have a child who is getting very, very frequent chest infections, if you have a child who's ending up on 3, 4, 5 antibiotics every year, you begin to think, I wonder, could we be looking at asthma here? If you're looking at a child who's sort of waking up in the middle of the night coughing, again, you begin to think, could we be dealing with asthma here? If you're looking at a family with a very, very strong history of allergies, very strong history of eczema, that sort of stuff, again, you're thinking, I wonder, could we be looking at asthma here?
And that was one of the things that surprised me when I was looking up stuff for this, is that kids with hay fever and eczema can be more prone to asthma, can't they?
Yeah, because these are all sort of, in a way, allergic things. Like eczema really is sort of more and sort of almost like an allergic reaction on your skin, as is hay fever, definitely. And so these are what we call atopic children. That's our term for them. And atopic children are just more prone to asthma.
And can it be a case of, if asthma is in the family, people could be more prone to it as well?
Again, absolutely.
So if once you reach a diagnosis then, and you've gone into the GP, they've diagnosed it's asthma, how do you manage it from there on out?
Well, this is sort of it. And as I say, the managements are, there's different sort of slightly different management between adults and children. With adults, the first of all you do is what we might call non-pharmacological sort of, you know, in other words, not necessarily always, not everything is drug related, but certainly there is no evidence that diet plays any part of it. And that's the first thing to get across, because I certainly remember when I was practicing, people would often say, oh, I've put the child on goat's milk, I've put the child on off dairy because of the asthma. There is really no evidence that diet makes any difference, and I think that's important. Avoiding the triggers, not always easy to do, I have to say, but avoiding the triggers, if there's something that you feel triggers it with the child, whether it's dust or whether it's the dog coming in or the cat coming in and cat hair and dander, they're quite usual triggers. Avoiding triggers is another great way. Exercise obviously helps an awful lot. If you have adults and they smoke, I mean, that's a total no-no, and that's totally ridiculous, you know. As I say, mold in a house is another sort of trigger factor, and you do often have people who are sort of often renting in sort of dingy little places, and there's a lot of mold in there, and you do find those children are way more prone to asthma. And sometimes gas heaters in houses, especially the unflued gas heater, your super serves and those sort of things, they're not great for it either. So they'd sort of be the non-pharmacological things that you can do. They're the sort of things you can do just to make it better.
Would the likes then, you mentioned gas heaters, would that similar then if you had gas cookers in your house and gas rings, would that have a similar effect, do you think?
Usually, but you don't have them on as long. Yeah, and you know yourself, when you go into a house with the super sir on, you can actually get it yourself. It sort of comes at you. So good ventilation is the answer to that, you know.
So moving past then the non-pharmaceutical ways of treating it, if people, and people will need inhalers and stuff like that, what's the next step then?
The next step then is, we can manage asthma. I can't cure it. Nobody can cure it, right? So it's not, but it is something that can be managed, and can be managed very, very, very well. And really it's by inhalers we manage it. And there's really two main types of inhalers, well, three in a way. There's the old blue inhaler that we all, that you see everybody with, and that's called a reliever inhaler. Ventolin, Salomal, Salbutamol, those sort of inhalers. And basically they go into your lung, they dilate the tube again. Okay, they just make it wider so you're not wheezing as much. They don't get rid of the inflammation. They don't get rid of the mucus. You might cough a little bit better after you've taken the inhaler. But they really just control the symptoms. And then you've steroid inhalers. And steroid inhalers are in use for 40, 50, 60 years now. And steroid inhalers go in and the steroid lines the lining of the tubes that we were talking about and settles down the inflammation. And that's vital to settle the inflammation. If you don't settle the inflammation, you don't control the asthma.
And people who are suffering from asthma, will they have access to both those inhalers? Is it a case of one over the other, or do they use the two of them in conjunction?
This is one of the things that has changed totally in the last few years. Up to now, up to about 2 or 3 years ago, we would give people their blue inhaler and we'd tell them, keep using your blue inhaler when you feel your symptoms are coming on. And we'd reserve the steroid inhaler until they were really bad. That has totally changed in the last few years. It's now gone to the stage that if you're using your blue inhaler and you're using more than one inhaler per year, which isn't a lot.
Doesn't sound a lot.
One inhaler per year. If you're using more than one blue inhaler per year, you're not controlled. You need something else. You need your steroid inhaler. And sometimes these steroid inhalers come as sort of the blue inhaler plus the steroid inhaler rolled into one. Things like Symbicort, Duoresp. There's a few other, Bufamix. There's a few combination ones that adults would often use. With children, it's often the blue inhaler and the brown inhaler, the Becketide inhaler.
Can you develop asthma later on in life?
Yes, you can. And some of the sort of trigger factors that we didn't talk about, cold air. A lot of people will notice when they go out into cold air in the morning, suddenly they get a little bit of a wheeze or a little bit of tightness. Or people who swim sometimes in the winter find, oh, I get wheezy afterwards. So it's probably a little tendency to asthma there. Exercise-induced asthma is a very common one that adults would get. In other words, they go for their run or they go play a game and they find that they don't get their second breath as easy as they used to. And you'd wonder sometimes with those, is there a little asthmatic tendency in there?
If you're ever in the unfortunate position of suffering an asthma attack or you are beside someone suffering an asthma attack, what should you do?
Give them their inhaler, basically. The blue inhaler, as I say, isn't it? It give them relief. If they have a combined steroid inhaler, that will give them even better relief. The most important things to look out for is how distressed are they or how quiet are they. If they've gone quiet, you get really, really worried and you need to be starting dialing 999 at this stage. But you just observe how they are and get their inhaler into them or get them somewhere where they can get their inhaler.
I was just going to say, in the event that their inhaler isn't to hand, is there anything they can do to try and relieve the symptoms before they obviously dial 999?
There isn't an awful lot. You really need to get stuff into them.
Okay. Finally then, COVID. Did COVID teach us anything about asthma?
COVID taught us one or two things about asthma. What we did learn is that asthmatics aren't more prone to COVID. We thought they might be, but they're not. In other words, their resistance isn't lower per se. But we do know that asthmatics who got COVID got into a little bit more trouble with their breathing. Probably predictable, but from that point of view. And certainly there are people, I think, who are post-COVID who would be chesty for quite a long time. And you'd have to wonder, is there sort of an asthmatic element behind that?
Okay. As usual, the message I would assume would be liaise with your GP and figure out what the best treatment is for you.
Absolutely. And the main thing, as there's a few main things to take away from this today. If you're over-reliant on your blue inhaler, you're wrong. You shouldn't be doing it.
That's a key message.
More than one blue inhaler a year is, you need other treatment. You need an inhaled steroid after that. One of the reasons inhalers don't always work, they don't work for two main reasons. People aren't using them or people aren't using them correctly. And the Irish Asthma Society have brilliant videos on how to use your inhaler. And it's well worth people just going in there and looking it up. Because you know yourself, you'd often see people, they just sort of squeeze their inhaler and it seems to blow away down the nose or out the mouth. It seems to go everywhere. There's techniques. You take your inhaler, you take a good deep breath in, you hold your breath for 10 seconds and then you wait and take your second dose. It's not two doses together at the time. It's one dose. Get it in there, wait 10 seconds and do it again. But there are brilliant videos up to enable people on the Irish Asthma Society's website to show people how to use their inhaler.
Brilliant. And particularly important for young kids.
Absolutely. And the first thing, if somebody comes into a doctor and their asthma seems to be in trouble, we would first thing we'd say is, let's just have a look at you using the inhaler till we see how it's going.
Yeah. Brilliant, Declan, as always, great advice there. A key message, if you're using the blue inhaler, you're using more than one a year, tis time to look
get
at something else.
And go talk to somebody.
And
yes.
If in doubt, liaise with your GP.
Absolutely.
Dr. Declan Matthews, as always, thanks a mil for joining me today.
Thanks, Linda.